Welcome to Real Paranormal Activity, the network. Entertainment you'll enjoy.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. LaFoss Corporation, LLC.
Here we go. I got an interesting guest, and it's a little, well, it's a change. I wanted to make a change up. We got a person here that's into the psychic medium, and she's into the paranormal and ghosts and everything else. She'll tell you about all that stuff, but it's Ann Bender. And welcome her to the show. And I think she's been around for a while. Her and her husband, Dave, and he's also a Native American Indian. She'll tell you about that. He started this paranormal organization, and then she married him, and then they got together, and they did the show together. Or they're doing this paranormal thing together. So they're doing a lot of work, and we'll be getting into that. Ann was raised in Michigan and her family's farm. Her first memories are not of horses and flowers, but of the spirits and the past events in the family home. Unfortunately, it terrified her parents when she spoke of people, events, and places she had never seen. She spent her early adulthood using her abilities while working as a paramedic and a radiology technologist, actually. When living in Washington, her nearby neighbor was a serial killer. Wow. Every time he killed, she dreamed through his victim's eyes of his victim's last moments. This drove her to a better understanding of how she could help others and not just sit as like a bystander. In 2003, she moved out with her husband, Dave, and she'll tell you a little bit about her husband, that he's into this very much also, and he's also into filming. He got into, I guess, filming a lot of different things. We'll let Ann explain that. And Ann Bender, welcome to the show. And you're doing a remote in your car. So, yes, it's this whole thing is different for me. This is great. A little change up here. Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Ann, and Ann Bender, of course. And then she'll tell you a little bit more about herself, that how she got involved with and with her husband. And she's also got a crew of five people, I think I counted. And they got a website, and we'll talk about that too. So, Ann, could you tell us a little bit more that I might have forgotten or not said anything?
Well, you said it perfectly. I was all alone, which is why we focus now with families, especially for me, children. I use my abilities. I connect with the little kids that aren't verbal yet or that are autistic and can't verbalize, and give them a voice. So part of when I'm screening or doing a preliminary interview with these families is that unspoken verbiage. It's not any different than any parent has when they know what their child needs or wants. It's really the same. That's how I look for missing people. That's how I look for objects with cold cases for crime scenes. But all of this came to be because I was driven by my neighbor that used to be Robert Lee Yates Jr. And seeing through each of the victims' eyes, the exact murder locations and where their bodies were. It took me several years to understand it because the case wasn't solved, but I actually drove to those locations and I did not have it within me to go to where the bodies were at the edge of the field. But when they found them, I realized what I had seen and became invested in just not just sitting by, not just being a bystander, but using what these abilities were to do good for both living and dead.
Right. And I guess today it's kind of driving you crazy what's happening to the kids today in the classrooms and everything, way behind in schooling. So if you're working with kids, I imagine you're having some work dealing with some of these kids, right? That are left out.
It's Not so much the kids, actually more the parents right now, because the parents are, if there's an active home, the parents are in the house more. It's stuff that might have been there all along, but they're noticing it more because they're at home more. So that's been a big shift. It actually, when COVID first started, it was eerily quiet at places that normally would be a hustle and a bustle. And I just listened to the quietness, and I confess I enjoyed it initially. It was a comfort just to not have the constant noise and not have to constantly turn off and ground to the point where I wasn't hearing it. So COVID gave me kind of a break, but right now they're making up for lost time. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Now getting back to the serial killer. Now, was any of that documented? Did you work with the police on that? And did you, you know, nothing, there could have been a book on that probably, right?
I'm actually writing my first book. It's a challenging, I have huge respect for anybody that writes a book. I calling it Living Through Death's Eyes, because he's not the only serial killer's path I've crossed.
Right.
The number of ones I've crossed paths with is quite astounding, but he's the first one that was alive that I looked into his eyes, watched him change the cars, and really put everything together. So I'm going to start with that vision of the woman that I saw running barefoot, naked through the field, and looking back at him and what she saw.
I can advise you, go ahead and do that book, because I'm an old guy and I'm on my third book in less than a year. So I've the first
wow.
day, What Do They Want? And that was released in March. I have a book that's it's called Senseless Wars and Conflicts by a Combat Veteran's Perspective. And that was just released last week. And now I'm working on Angels and Watchers, something that you are probably touching on in some of your subjects. So I wanted to get to, well, your husband, Dave Bender, he's a Native American Indian, and he got started in this stuff. And he's also into filming and doing movies, right?
He loves acting, and he loves to do just little roles that he can just have fun with and play with. It's a lot of fun for him. He, I'm sure, would love to do it more. It just opportunity hasn't presented itself. But he's actually a shaman. He's the last officially trained shaman with the Chippewa Cree tribe. And he does blessings. He can only do it when requested. So I can't even offer it. But when people say, hey, you know, I'd love to have my house blessed, is there any way we can offer that? It cannot be done for a fee. He only can take gifts in exchange. And that's the same way when I'm asked to do my medium work. I never charge for that. If a donation is to be given, it's given to animals to support feral animals in our community or any animals in need. So I don't believe in billing or charging for that. I don't condone anybody that does. That's between them and their practice. Right. For me and my practice, that's what I choose.
Right. Yeah, I saw that you also get into, I know you do this for the community, but what do you do for people in the community? Do you go in and look for evil spirits or ghosts or anything like that? And could you tell us some really good juicy stories from those events?
Yeah, I definitely could. But we do a preliminary interview before we meet with the family, the business owner, whoever's requested our help. And that's to make sure that everything's safe. It's that same when I work as a medic or a firefighter, you survey the scene, you make sure it's safe, that there's nothing illegal that has to be reported, child abuse, neglect, crack houses. It's insane the types of scenarios I have seen over the years. So we for our own safety and security, we have more than one person go in for that preliminary interview. And that sets us up, should we go and do that investigation, for an investigation that can be geared around one, that that clients need and request, and two, when the activity happens, what rooms, the sensitive on that for that investigation, that portion is not given to them at all. They get no information. So obviously, if I'm the one that meets with the client, I'm not the sensitive for that case. And then we pair up a balance of technical gurus and debunkers on one end of it, and as well as the sensitives in the medium with in the middle meeting technology, and just try to include every aspect of an investigation rather than to discount any component. There's so much in science that is not proven yet. Mm-hmm. We like to keep an open mind and really do use every tool in the shed to help that client.
Now, on your website, I know you have one. We'll be talking about that before we go, benderparanormal.com. Do you have any movies or any pictures of any ghosts or apparitions that you have found in these houses?
Yes, several. There is a lady that I could see in my mind's eye that I was able to capture on camera at the Woodland Opera House many years ago. This was done before I even knew about Photoshop. And I didn't even know I had captured it. They heard my squeal from the other room because it's so clear. We went back later to try and recreate something similar and never could. Mm-hmm. To this day, she still shows with the same light blue dress. She actually had glasses on, was turning her head. You can see her hands and her feet transparent through the seats, but with great detail. Another is a woman that is, it is her mother that showed herself, whom I described at the time. And the mother appeared exactly in the picture how I described, but more clear than the elderly daughter in the red shirt. Mm-hmm. And another fantastic one is actually of a KKK member up at Amador Jail. And we just concluded a overnight investigation, what I believe was his brother's business at the Jackson Spa at the time, because I believe he was the sheriff. And he chased off Dave. So ghosts really can present in white.
Yeah, a very scary event. I mean, I guess they get aggressive. I mean, have you ever? I mean, yeah. It sounds like an aggressive ghost, or could that be a poltergeist? There's a ghost, and then they call it poltergeist.
You know, there's a lot of different terms, and each situation is so unique and independent. You can't really, generalize any of it. I think the main grouping should be an intelligent haunting or a residual haunting, whereas an intelligent haunting is going to try and scare somebody off and actually interact with them actively, answer questions like the miners did at 10:45 by signaling SOS with our REM pod on the 100th anniversary of the mine explosion up in Jackson. And we captured all of this happening.
Have you ever seen a poltergeist go crazy throwing things around?
Yeah, we actually have. We've had them change TV shows that weren't plugged in, change it to Spanish subtitles. Again, the TV was never plugged in. We've had them set off mechanical devices with no batteries, like a doorbell and another item that was sitting with the batteries out, where they still set it off. Mm-hmm. It's too numerous to go into. I met a demon, and we don't take demonic cases, but it actually, in front of six other people, lifted me up and threw me against the wall.
Really?
My husband didn't screen that one well enough. That's one where we actually had to tell the family there isn't anything we can do here. I saw it in great detail because I'd see those things. I see critters that are inhuman, not necessarily demonic, but I also see demons.
Knows what they look like. A lot of people are always wondering, what do these things look like? What do these demons look like?
It depends on which one it is and what level it is. I won't go into too much detail because that gives them strength and power. Inhuman critters, the ones I had never seen before when in Michigan anyway, were the Tommyknockers. They look very similar to something demonic, but they're very benign. They are simply guarding that space and area. And how they look is actually how they're pictured. The one I met up close and personal was at the Willow Steakhouse in Jamestown. And I have since then met several other ones. I've noticed they do change. They're like people. They each have individual looks, but all being pretty similar. So
are they physical, or are they kind of like transparent, you can see through them? Or
they're more physical.
Really?
When I see them, they're more solid, but yet they, when you see them, they are in what, for me, what I interpret as a different dimension. They interact with this dimension, but I really think they're in a different dimension, in a different realm, which is why anybody just can't walk up and see them.
Right.
And that's a whole nother theory, but I really, there's too much that I have personally encountered and interacted with to not know there is more out there than what we have scientifically proven, to not, to have this many people interact and feel these things. There's too much.
Right. I know that you use electronics. You have EMF meters. You have dousing, things, I guess you douse. Now that's, somebody asked me about dousing the other day, and I said, well, that's where they usually cross like two wires or something. I kind of figure these brass welding rods, they cross them and they look for water and things of that nature. How do you use dousing in the spiritual world?
My family was raised dousing for water. That goes back to the Black Forest in Germany. Mm-hmm. Dowsers, the miners definitely used it with their pocket watch. They used a gold pocket watch to douse with a pendulum type of scenario for when they would decide where to mine for gold. I can feel when there's gold, and I can feel when there's gold in them there hills. I can
really?
See that. Yes. But to show it, I use my dowsing rods as a visual example. I do what's called, I have called double blind dowsing, so that I ask fun, silly questions that I don't know the answers to get a baseline. And then I have that person either can say out loud or with their thought what those questions are. And I know whether what my rods do, what those answers are to those questions. In some cases, I actually hear the question, but I keep it to myself, as it's oftentimes very personal. And these are things that don't need to be said out loud in a group of people. I have had situations where I've asked people to leave so I could continue on in private with the client, because there's something so personal that needs to be addressed.
Okay. Do you use the typical dousing rods, or do you do there? Are there, is there a such thing as electronic dousing rod?
For me, no. For me, that's not how I work. The wavelength I work off of doesn't. It's not something I can tune electronically yet. I think there may be a device on an experiment we're working on, though, that is very similar to the exact wavelength I use. I can't speak more on it. However, I feel that the technology very well may be coming that shows what I am doing.
Right.
I'm really optimistic.
Okay, now when you run into these entities, these ghosts or poltergeists or whatever they are, your EMF meter, I guess, jumps off the charts, right? And then you get...
Not always. Depends on how that spirit is communicating, what type of energy they're using. It might be the Geiger counter that spikes or lowers. It might be a different device. It might be the carbon monoxide detector that is interactive. It always depends on each case as far as which energy. And no, the EMF does not always spike.
That's interesting, the carbon monoxide detector and the things of that. I never heard that, but you guys are having success using those. You probably don't use them. They're probably in the house and they go off, right? Whatever.
I actually brought it and I did it for that investigation. I did something, said bring it, and it worked. It actually interacted, whereas you know that a carbon monoxide detector is not designed for that. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it was a mining situation, a residence above a once active mine, and it very much did interact. And this was in Placerville. It was totally by accident that we found this out. But from then, we've already had, I had used Geiger counters, taught people on how to use Geiger counters. I use it with an EMF detector. But to find out the carbon monoxide detectors, so then we went, okay, what else are we missing? What other devices might be interactive in the absence of an EMF that's going on?
Recordings?
So
use
recordings, temperature, you name it. We keep all of them rolling and going, because it's always, you want to have more than one thing cross-correlating that event. Maybe there's a cold breeze at that time. Maybe somebody feels something. They feel tingly on their arm. Mm. So we're constantly recording more than one data point and more than one recorder, audio recorder is running, because where the voice is loudest, we'll pinpoint the location of that disembodied voice.
Right. And you also get cold. Do you feel chill or cold? I've asked other ghost hunters and they said they do get cold. The room gets cold. Have you ever felt that too?
The cold happens when they suck up the heat in the environment, but it also can be hot. And it doesn't mean it's a demon when it becomes hot. So the reverse can happen. It's just like with disembodied voices. They can be above human range, or they can be below human range, or they can be the both above and below at the same time in the same recording. So that's why there's so much to the review of evidence. There's so much to an investigation when done properly.
Okay, I wanted to ask you this. Do you ever feel like a ghost ever jumps you? I've had other ghost investigators tell me that sometimes they'll bring some ghost home or some negative energy home with them. Does that ever happen?
When I started, that's happened. And I had one try to at the in Jackson. He was a frisky pervert, for lack of better terms. But I was grounded well enough, so it didn't affect me. I did have other team members who were not, and they got so ill they had to leave the house. It was so interactive there that they physically became ill. So, yeah, it can happen, but we take a lot of safeguards. My husband and his uncle, who is always with us when we investigate, always adds a level of protection to prevent that. It has happened, though. It happened early on when I first met my husband. He brought somebody home, and it took a little bit to get him out of there, but we did.
Yeah. Have you ever seen any, like you said, some weird creatures or cryptids involved in this whole dimensional thing coming in and out?
That is a very complicated answer, and without sounding too crazy, yeah, I'm gonna pass on that discussion. But have I encountered UFOs and that type of thing? Yes, two different occasions, one of which I actually interacted with it. It was a family. That doesn't sound too crazy. I do very much believe that there are Bigfoot that are physically in our realm, and they're not, it's just that where they're at, they are perfectionists at being elusive. Mm-hmm. But I very much, that the Yeti, those are creatures that are, I just haven't been discovered. There's so many areas, just like the ocean has so much depth to it, where things haven't been discovered that are physically here in our realm. I think there's a lot of misidentification. When an animal is very, very sick and has mange and some other illnesses and lose all their hair, I think those can be, or birth defects can be, areas where an animal can be easily misidentified. Just like with spirits, I think you need to take it on a case-by-case basis, weigh all the facts and the evidence with it, and not just assume off of a secondhand rumor.
Right. I got a chapter in my book, and I'm going to ask a question. I knew I wanted to ask you this question and get your opinion on it. I talked to Grant Cameron. I've been in the UFO circles for some time, and I asked this question. What is the difference between a ghost, a poltergeist, an angel, or an ET? Is there a difference?
Yeah, they're all different. They're all very different. You're trying to say, what's the difference between a human and a dog?
Yeah.
They both are living. They both look totally different. They interact with our world differently, but do they interact? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if they're dimensional and they come through a portal, or are they... Let's say that sometimes when a tree falls in the woods and nobody's there, does the tree make a sound? Same thing with a ghost. If nobody goes in that house and they don't have the energy that the ghost is looking for to draw from, will that ghost appear or make some kind of a...
They're still there. It's silly. The tree still fell. The ghost is still there. When you talk with aliens, they travel more often than not dimensionally, which is what is so interesting to me. They have found proof at Skinwalker Ranch. They have found the right frequency, which is the same frequency I work off of. Mm-hmm. However, it doesn't mean everyone travels dimensionally, because there's so many different aliens out there. And that's where I think you're naive to say we're the only humans, the only living creature anywhere in a universe this vast. Is statistically impossible.
Right. I've seen ETs, and I've written a book, of course, but I've never seen a ghost. And when I walked in with my buddies who were ghost investigators some years back, I would go with them. I said, "You're not going to see a ghost with me." And they looked at me and said, "Why, Dave?" I said, "Because they don't come around me. I've witnessed ETs, and I've witnessed some paranormal things happen around me, but I've never witnessed a ghost. And I think there's something about my, maybe my energy or something that doesn't, or my consciousness that doesn't allow that. Could that be possible? That a person only with a third eye could see these things?
No, because you can have anybody with no prior ghost experience it. I could tell you, be careful what you wish for. If you were with me, I enhance other people's ability to see. But you might not be realizing or using all the different abilities you have for whatever reason, in that the perfect example of noticing a difference or of a spirit presence. If you walk into a house you've never been in and you walk in with the lights on, if you go into the same location at night with all the lights off, does it feel different? Does it feel different to you? If the answer is, yeah, this place does, but this other place doesn't feel different, you have experienced a presence. And it could be as simple as the house. It could be as simple as residual energy. But if you feel, you sense a difference, there's something about that space making a difference, like sitting in a movie theater. And you feel people around you, and you look around, and nobody's there. You are the only one there. You've gotten early to the show, but yet you, it feels like there's people watching you. And then you go and look, there's nobody there. So you have had those experiences, but you don't realize it or attribute that to the same thing as a ghost, but it is energy.
But you're an empath, and you could probably see energy or feel energy from strange people. I know I do. I can tell a strange person what their energy is a little bit different. It's a little bit odd. I can pick up on that because of my experiences, but nothing like with a ghost. I've heard of doppelgangers and doubles and things of that nature, and war dogs, a double of a person. That's happened to me one time, but I just wonder, with everything that's going on, there's so many things, like you said earlier, so many things we don't know about. You know, that's the big thing there. So you're an empath, and you started this when you was a child, and you spooked your parents out. And I think we'll get to that in the next segment. We got two segments to go, and we're going to draw an end to this segment. And you're listening to Ann Bender, paranormal organization she has with her husband, Dave. And they've been doing this for some time, and she's got a lot of stories to tell, and even some stories that she doesn't want to tell and give these spooks any credit for it. But this is the Dave Emmons Show. Ann Bender is my guest, and you're listening also, if you listen to WODY Radio in Maryland, Eddie Carson, you listen to that show. It's odysseyradiolive.com, and we'll be right back. Okay. Hi, everybody. We're back on segment two. We were just getting into the empath thing, and that talent has given you an edge, an advantage, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you know where to point the camera and take the picture when they're moving, you can capture far more information than when, if you're just shooting blindly. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever witnessed, let's talk about the four things that I've talked about being dimensional. You ever witnessed an angel involved in any of these things?
Well, what I would consider an angel, it would be what other people would call a crisis apparition. When I had a relative that passed, and she got my attention at the moment of her passing with this golden angelic, this rose gold angelic type of presence. I think knowing her in life made sense that she would have become an angel, bar none. It's not as common for me to see those wonderful things as it is some of the darker things. Mm-hmm. But nothing's impossible. I just go with the flow with what I see in that moment.
I know you have a child. Do you ever talk to your child about any of this, or you keep that away from your child?
It's impossible to keep Allie away from it. She, 3 months gestation, was already sitting off her favorite toys in her room. She is a far more gifted psychic medium than both Dave and I put together. Mm. And so what I've done to support her and help her understand that not everybody sees what she is seeing is to give her an understanding at an early age about it. And the biggest and hardest lesson was the fact that not everybody can see what she sees. It doesn't make it not real. It just means they just can't confirm that. And there's other ways that she can look to confirm it, but I'm there for her, listen to her. And this is what I do with my little ones and the families that are the little ones are interacting with. I've done this all along in that giving them a early support system, a non-judgmental listening ear early. So when they become teenagers and they may get pregnant or have other major things that they're scared to talk about their parents, they're not scared to talk to their parents given this situation because they've already built a solid foundation of non-judgmental communication.
Okay, now you mentioned there's some paranormal stories. Are there a couple of stories that jump out to you that, I mean, we talked about ghost sightings. Is there anything outside of that, like paranormal? Paranormal, I guess, encompasses a lot of things. A lot of times they want to call UFOs paranormal, but I don't accept it as that. Do you?
Oh, anything outside the normal is considered paranormal. So by definition, a UFO is paranormal. However, it does, I believe, have its own subcategory. And it's be usually an unidentified flying object or the new term. I forget the new term of it. I'm so old school. but technically, yeah, it is paranormal. But like with any field, there's subspecialties.
Okay, now, these paranormal stories, is there one that, I mean, have you seen things like boxes or tables or chairs move around in front of you like you see on Strange Evidence on TV? And matter of fact, speaking of TV, you're on episode 4, I guess, on this fall with Haunted Hospitals.
I don't know what episode it is. It's season 4 of Haunted Hospitals. And that'll be an episode like no other. I actually share what happened to me, and I won't give anything out on that, but it's certainly a story like no other.
Well, we'll see that within the next month or two, right?
Yeah, I should be sometime after October where season 4 comes out. Mm-hmm. I don't even know the title of the episode yet, but that was filmed last year in February in Detroit, Michigan, in 0-degree temperatures. Reminded me why I left Michigan.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Can you talk about anything with any haunted hospitals or is this going to be on the program and you're not allowed to talk about it?
Anything else I can't discuss, but we've got some fun stuff that we're working on and upcoming. So stay tuned is my answer to that.
Mm-hmm. So you travel outside of your own home state. So you do travel around and visit sites and go places and investigate, right?
Yes, we have.
This sounds like you got 5 members, a team that helps you. Are these people?
There's more than 5. There's just 5 listed on the website at present.
Right. What do they do? They go with you on investigations or what?
Well, yeah. Depending on the size of the location, it's physically impossible to cover every aspect of a 3,000 square foot location, for example, or larger. You need a team that is all on the same page, and you don't want too big of a team. I found we used to have a really, really large team, and it just is hard to have that closeness and that network where you're all thinking on the same page. So I really like the smaller groups. It's more intimate. It's more personal. And if we have to schedule another time where we go back a different day, then we do that. But I really like the smaller, more intimate groups that are family. We know each other. We keep in contact. And we have interests besides the paranormal. That's another key part of our family. Mm-hmm. And that's why it is Bender Family Paranormal. Because we really, that's important. Family is important. Yes. It should be first and foremost.
Today, it's more important. We have to stick together. You talk about, well, after the paranormal stories, there's an education that you do for people. You educate people. Now, how would you tell a person if a person says, "And I don't know if I have a ghost in my house or not. Could you tell me what I should look for?"
Well, I would ask them, why do you think you've got a ghost in your house? Is it because you've been watching a lot of TV and all of a sudden every little sound you haven't figured out or looked at it optimistically, when there could be squirrels on your roof because there's a bunch of trees and oak trees and they're just scampering around? Or is it something that is going on that maybe different people in your house have noticed and gone, hey, what happened over here? Why was this taken? So I would say, why do you think there is a ghost in your house? And then secondly, is it causing any discomfort, trouble? Is it bothering you? I mean, hey, if it pays rent, why not? Keep them around.
Right. Yeah.
But is it disturbing the family? Is it disturbing your sleep at night? Is it causing a disturbance? That's when we would go, okay, let's go next step. What is causing the disturbance? How often, et cetera?
Now, I've been touched at night on my shoulder. It feels like somebody rubbing my shoulder, and I'll wake up, and it wasn't my wife because she's turned the other way, and it wasn't her. Do ghosts do that, or do ETs more involved do that?
That would be a spirit. And for somebody who says they've never had an encounter with a ghost, you just told me you have.
Well, I've been touched on my leg, but I always, because I've been visited by ETs. I got some film of some of them here 2 years ago inside my house. They were ETs. They weren't ghosts. But I can't separate the spiritual, the angel, the ETs, and a lot of religious people probably say, wait a minute, that's blasphemy. You can't separate an angel from an ET and a ghost. I can't really. Was it an angel? Was it an ET, or was it a ghost? I don't know. What's touching me like that? But
tells me that somebody that's saying that is Catholic. No judgment against any religion, but there are certain religions that will group everything into a big category because of that person's religious base. And that's one of the questions we ask on our prelim. What is your religious foundation? So that we can make sure we respect that religion. If it's Jewish, there are certain things to be done. If it's a Hindi family, there are certain practices that must be done before an investigation. So we do not judge. We respect all. And if they still want our help, then we're happy to step in and help as long as their foundation is addressed first.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had any films put on Strange Evidence or Paranormal Witness? Those programs have a lot of different films that they show. Have you put any pictures or anything up on those TV sites?
No, I have a plethora of pictures that would blow any lecture apart. I've never lectured on it. I haven't really felt the need to, but I do put it on the website. It is there for people to see. I'm happy to share because the things that I've captured are so detailed that it's very interesting. And there's a lot of things that I haven't put up that I have. And it's just a matter of time and energy to display it correctly and properly so that it's in its true form.
Well, there's a lot of people that are run with those pictures too and take them as their own. There's a lot of that, I guess, that might happen too if you just throw them out there, unless your website is locked. They can't copy that. But I'm not getting into legalities too much there, but I know I've been through that myself. People want pictures and they want what you have, your stories and everything. A talking head always wants that type of information. And sometimes you want to keep things to yourself, like you said. Now, your educational part, that goes beyond just talking. Do you talk to the community or do you go to libraries?
Yeah.
And lectures?
Okay. No, we do classes to the community. We've done 4-H groups. We've done various different educational formats and platforms to adult education and others. So my husband and I both love and have a passion for teaching and interacting with the community. And that's really our driving force. Mm-hmm. And just being able to share that knowledge base, mm-hmm. and let other people decide for themselves, what they may have going on. Mm-hmm. Here's how you would go about it. Here's what to and what not to do to stay safe.
Right. Could you give us a quick outline of what maybe a lecture would be? Just a quick ABC outline of what you would talk about to a class or a library group or whatever.
I have so many different ones. It depends on the scenario when I'm asked to. I have one for the USS Hornet that focuses on the stories from there and different events that we've had from investigating. I have other ones that are a Ghost 101. I just talk about the origin. If it's dowsing, I teach about the origin so people have a good understanding that where it came from, where it's gone, and where it could be going. Here's different types of dowsing. Not many people realize the variety of types of dowsing, especially depending on the ages. So we always try to incorporate facts, history with current engagement and practices. Mike Eicher lecture. I focus on opening people up to the EMF spectrum and how the fact that light is part of that EMF spectrum, radiation is still part of that EMF spectrum, and all the stuff in between that happens could be ultrasound, it could be this or that. They're like, huh? That's all, yes, that's all the same EMF spectrum.
You're kind of an expert at that because you're X-ray technician, right? I mean, yeah.
It definitely, for the last over 35 years, is my forte. And I do have a far better understanding of that than the average person. But that's because I took my own education a few steps farther. But I'm weird in that I love physics and algebra and chemistry. So I'm not the normal Joe off the street. I'm a psychic medium, but I am still gaining an understanding from the scientific side of it, exactly what I'm doing. I want to know exactly what wavelength I'm using. When I can visualize a missing person in Vancouver, Canada, to the exact location, what am I doing to make that connection? I want to know the physics behind it.
How do these come to you? Telepathically, in a dream, or how do these messages come?
It varies. Sometimes it's when I'm least expecting it. It depends on that other person's intention and thought. There's so many different scenarios that it's mind-boggling. It may be a mother that simply reaches out and goes, "And you did our case a few years back. I know you have this ability. My daughter's been missing for 3 months." And I pause and I say, "Okay, give me a day to think on it." I just kind of let my mind wander. And for that particular case I'm mentioning, I saw her in a city I didn't recognize, but it was a big city that she was intending to come back. And it was a boy that she had run off with, but it wasn't a bad situation in her case. And I let the mother know. I said, "I believe within a month to a month and a half, you will hear from her. Don't give up hope. She is alive. She is in a big city and she's with a boyfriend, but it's not working out. She'll reach out to you." And that is what happened in that case that I'm talking about.
Let me make you frustrated with this question. I know we talked earlier what ghosts are, where they might be coming from. But I know in your classes, and especially with kids, they might ask you, "Well, Anne, where do ghosts come from?"
Their energy. E equals MC squared. Energy cannot be produced or gotten, or, oh my goodness, my brain just stopped working. Destroyed. Energy cannot be produced or destroyed. It simply changes form. It changes from particles to visible particles to, like, for a ghost, they can transform from a sphere to a mist to an apparition and back again, and all within milliseconds. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. So that's how I know that works that way. But in looking at people with near-death experiences or when people are actively dying, that energy simply changes form. Sometimes it comes back and they're able to tell you everything. And other times they're there, but they haven't necessarily crossed over, meaning gone to that other dimension. So that's where I help people with crossing over. I'm not frustrated by this question at all. I think it's a good question. And I wish more people would explain what they're seeing, because I only can speak for what it's like for me. I'm curious what other people, how they see that energy change. Kirlian photography is one way. I think that's a good description of what I'm seeing. I just think there's more to learn.
Infrared. I use infrared camera, trail cam, to pick up things like that. Now, if ghosts are drawing, do ghosts draw energy from people when they're in the room? I think I alluded to that a while ago. They draw your energy to come. I heard that a lot of times they don't have enough energy to come into our realm, and they got to draw energy from people. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, that's why many people are exhausted and tired after an investigation. If you don't give them another energy source, this is why I want to incorporate a Tesla coil. I'd like to give them an energy source. And that's kind of our next step in as far as that bit of technology. I want to see the difference between before and after to a certain location we just were at. If that were to give them a nice energy source, will we get more information from them? That's my other question.
Right.
So specific, yeah. This is specific to our ongoing multiple Jackson, California investigations.
The reason why I'm confused about it, I'm at a chapter now. I will be at a chapter on my book that I'm going to explain the difference between a spirit, an angel, and a ghost. And what I'm seeing is there's a difference in, they're all invisible. An angel can be called an extraterrestrial also because they come from way out. I mean, distance and time is no obstacle to them. Same thing with the ghost, I guess. They come through the same dimensional type portal or they're stationary here. You mentioned something about some of them are just stationary here all the time, but do some of them pop in and out?
Well, yeah, and again, that's where you can't group any one into any certain general category. You can't group anything into one category. You must keep an open mind. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so difficult in explaining and writing books, because given one scenario may not have anything to do with the next. An angel that presents doesn't make it an extraterrestrial. Every extraterrestrial isn't going to represent in an angel form. Maybe they present as a gray. So
Now let me ask you this question. Maybe you can give me some insight on this. This is going to be in my book. It's a personal story. In 72, I saw a lady in white, like a white wedding gown. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I felt the presence. I looked up and I saw this lady in white with a veil over their head. I know I've read other stories about the lady in white. Do you have any perspective on that?
That would be a scenario that, unless she interacts with you, would be a residual haunting. And again, that one won't interact. It will replay it usually at the same time, the same place. So anybody may encounter her. That happens at the Ione Hotel with the green lady that comes down the steps at 2:30 in the morning. She doesn't interact. She comes out from a specific room and does the same thing. Does she interfere with anybody? No. Does she use part of the atmospheric things to present herself in that residual? Yes, she actually does. It gets very cold in there, and there are people that have noticed other things. Partially because there's other spirits there that are interactive. But
you wake up when she's in the room, and this was two different locations, two different houses, 72 and 99, those years. And they were in two different locations. I saw this apparition. And it was both at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I felt the presence, and I got up and I looked at it. That is strange to me. I think it's a ghost or whatever it is, lady in white. That's why I'm
that tells me that that's a family member of yours that for whatever reason is presenting herself at that moment to get your attention.
Really? So
given that scenario. So yes, again, you have had ghost experiences, Mr. I haven't ever seen a ghost. You just told me about numerous ones, yeah. But you're not attributing it to that. Why is that?
Because I've had so many ET experiences, actual ET experiences, and mm-hmm. ETs are invisible too, because walk around your house invisible, and they can actually be, I guess, misdiagnosed as we would are defined because of their invisibility. It's kind of like a ghost or poltergeist. But no, these are never interesting questions. I know I'm throwing this stuff at you. And yeah, I probably have seen a ghost, that lady in white, but I want to get to another topic here. The education part of it, I think, is fantastic that you and your husband are doing this. And it would be great that people would be interested in finding out more about the subject. Now, you talk about spontaneous combustion. Have you ever seen that?
I have not ever seen it, but it actually is not a paranormal type of phenomenon. It's a physical phenomenon. it can happen chemically. There's a lot of different ways as a firefighter that I learned it can happen. And it has to do with improper storage, storing rags with chemicals. So spontaneous combustion by itself is really not paranormal. What makes it paranormal is when you have things that are not normally combustible burst into flames.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen on TV shows, and you just see the aftermath, like a chair burned up and a foot that's left. It's very unusual. I mean, you're into the firefighting and the medical stuff. What is your opinion on it? I know you just talked a little bit about it. What is your opinion on it's if it doesn't fit in the paranormal, then is it something like chemical or
sometimes it depends on the mechanism. I think the actual spontaneous combustion case that we were presented with and it did investigate, while it was ruled spontaneous combustion, I feel that it was arson by a living person who simply knew where the cameras were. I think in the tape you can see when he lights, because we also had a person that was of interest in this case. Mm-hmm. You can actually see him light this and then try to blow on it and get this particular thing on fire. Because he knew where the cameras are, he could hide what he was doing. So that part kind of stinks because it was a really active location with a lot of spirits and a lot of thick history. It's only because in the video at the time, they don't have the technology to be able to prove that it wasn't spontaneous combustion.
Okay, now, in your educational classes, I know I'm hitting you on this quite a bit. Do you tell people how to get started in ghost investigations? Do you lay out a plan that they need to follow? And are there, and you talk about haunted locations. What are the two, that's two questions and I'll back to back. What are the most haunted locations in this country?
That's the second one I'd have to think on because there.
How about Alton, Illinois?
That's actually there's a spot in Indiana that's pretty high on the radar. Mm-hmm. There are so many incredibly active locations. Yeah. I don't know that I could really rank. It's different. The activity in each of those spots is so different. So it depends on what you're talking about by activity.
Right. It could be in a neighbor's house, right?
Yeah. We sure. Right now, the location in Jackson, California, that we're helping with the mines and the 100-year anniversary of the explosion, where 47 documented people were killed. We've come to learn that there were more, but there's no way to prove it. That area right now is pretty much off the radar for activity, and I don't know that it's the 100 year anniversary or what, but right now that's definitely spiked with intensity. I mean, to the point where, like I said, many of our team members were sick. They're physically ill in that location. We thought one was having a heart attack and we're ready to send him to the hospital. And he got away from the location and he felt fine. So
it's kind of like the Skinwalker Ranch and the energy that hits these guys in that show, right? Something similar.
I have a theory on that. I've actually reached out to them. They never responded back to me. They used some of it inadvertently in another episode that I saw later on. So I think they already were onto what I was trying to say, but I didn't give too many details because I didn't want, I just didn't want to say too much. Mm-hmm. I'm sure by now they've seen enough that they understand. Yeah, they're right below an active portal that is there. It's a dimensional gateway. That's not the only place that they exist. There are other places. There's actually a lot of them in Utah specifically. So they're onto it. They're onto the right thing. I think suspect they know there's a lot they cannot say on TV.
Right. I know in the ET world, they hit you with magnetic energy and they dumb you down. all you can do is observe. You can't talk. You can't do anything. You can't take a picture. I call it dumbed down. And that happened to me and my cousin one time on my front porch from this one that I contacted in Sedona. But I know what that feels like. Now, let's go back. I know a lot of people are interested in near-death happenings. What is one of the, I guess, maybe one or two of your, the best near-death stories you've ever witnessed or heard of? They talk about their relatives, right? Or
I would have to say my own. I jumped in the lake to save a ex-boyfriend's daughter from drowning. She was autistic. And the level of calmness when she was actually standing on my head and I was completely underwater, the level of calmness in that moment is something that, in hindsight, it was so calm and peaceful. It helped me to see that passageway between the two worlds. It helped me to understand that it's okay when I'm helping other people cross over.
This hour has went by so fast. We're done with the show, believe it or not. Yeah, it goes so fast when you get interested in things. And my guest, Ann Bender, BenderParanormal.com. Look her up on the website. And this is the Dave Emmons Show. And we're syndicated through WODY Radio, and that's out of Maryland, and that's Eddie Carson's, and it's Odyssey Radio Live.com. So listen to that on audio. We'll be putting this out on Facebook, Rumble, and YouTube. So, Ann, thank you very much, and have a good one now. Thank you for the show.